Good morning. It's always fun. I should do like the children's sermon and bring candy for you all to reward you for listening, but sadly there's no candy today. So I grew up in a nice suburban neighborhood in a comfortable three-bedroom home. And at age 7, my life was pretty much happy and secure. The only blight on my happiness and security was a nasty little boy about the same age as me who lived right at the end of the street. His name was Jubal, and he was bigger than the rest of us kids in the neighborhood. And I believe the correct name for him was Hellion. He was a mean little kid who loved to terrorize me and my friends. Whenever we would ride our bikes past his home, he would yell curses at us. And when he could, he would chase us down and push us off our bikes. Then he would lift up our bikes and toss them as far as he could, denting the frames, bending the spokes, scraping off some of the paint, and causing us a lot of humiliation. All the kids in the neighborhood feared him. Nobody liked him. So as much as possible, we avoided him. I remember once when my cousin came to visit, who was, courageous to the extent of being a little foolhardy. He suggested that we carry our little league baseball bats tucked under our arms as we passed by Jubal's house. Seemed like a good plan to me. And for once, Jubal didn't emerge from his home to terrorize. Perhaps the baseball bats dissuaded him, or maybe he just wasn't home. But for the most part, the bullying continued. Since most of us enjoyed circling the block on our bikes, avoiding Jubal was always a challenge. We hated him. We hated him with a passion. Then one day, Jubal was killed when he tried to cross the freeway near our homes. I never learned all the details, but I remember being happy that he had died, because he was mean. He was a nuisance. He was a bully. So my childish self told me he got what he deserved. We were better off without him. In time, though, some information about his home life began to emerge. He had, it turns out, been abused and neglected and unloved by his mom and dad. They didn't even bother to discipline him for anything that he did wrong, letting him go wherever and do whatever that he wanted. And in truth, his life was a terribly lonely one, filled with bitterness and a desire to prove that he was strong. So he turned into a bully. His pain made him a little monster whose recklessness eventually led to his death. All in all, Jubal had a short and terrible life. When, many years later, I began to understand a little bit about his upbringing, my former hate began to dissipate. And I couldn't help but wonder what might have happened if some of us had tried to reach out to him and show him a little bit of kindness rather than just reacting with fear. Sadly, I'll never know. And I asked myself, what if I'd grown up in a home filled with anger and violence and loneliness? Perhaps some of you know, because your own upbringing wasn't very happy. Or what if I'd grown up as part of a minority who were regularly treated with prejudice and exclusion? Or what if I'd had my world unexpectedly be turned upside down and found myself without adequate food and shelter and medical care? Our natural response seems to be to turn aside from such needs because it feels like we really can't adequately address them. Or to ignore them because, well, we don't want to think about unhappy things. But did God really want us to turn aside so that our own sense of security remains unchallenged? No. He wants us to experience empathy for those who are in need. My experience with Jubal led me, even in my younger days, to start thinking about the stories that are behind every broken person that I'll ever meet. For every struggling human being, there's a story. For every hurting person, there's a story. For every awkward and antisocial person, there's a story. For every poor and oppressed person, oh yes, there's a story. And when we're willing to make an effort to try to understand these stories, to imaginatively walk in the shoes of others and feel what it might be like to be them, we open ourselves up to becoming empathetic. The Greek word empatheia, from which our word empathy comes, means to feel into, or more precisely, to temporarily see through the eyes of others rather than merely seeing through our own eyes. Oops, nope, sorry. I got that wrong. I was reading ahead. It says to understand the subjective experience of another person. That's what empathy is. And when we feel empathy, then that's when we temporarily see through their eyes rather than merely seeing through our own. Our heart is moved by the concerns of other people. We intuit their needs, and we let what affects them have an emotional impact upon us, even though that comes with a little bit of cost. And that impact should lead us to see them in a different way. I think this is precisely what Paul was getting at in Romans 12:15, which we heard this morning. And what did he say to the believers? He said, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. And I think it's what he's talking about in 1 Corinthians 12:26, when he writes that when one part of the body suffers, every part of the body should suffer with it. When one part is honored, every part should rejoice with it. It's also the basis for his instruction in Philippians 2:4, when he told the members of that church that they should not only look to their own interests, but that they should take note of the interests of others. Only an empathetic person can do that. It's at the heart of Peter's admonition in 1 Peter 3:8. Be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate and humble. And in Galatians 6:2, we are told that we should carry each other's burdens. That is what empathy should lead us to. Now, if we're honest with ourselves, these commands in Scripture can feel a little overwhelming, right? Or almost impossible. How can I live in accordance with these biblical encouragements? I think it can begin to happen by using our imagination to ponder what it might feel like to be in somebody else's shoes, to feel their hurt, their struggles, their pain, their needs, and all the hurdles that they might have to face in trying to live a good life. Whether that be prejudice, a poor upbringing, unforeseen circumstances affecting their health or finances, whatever. The empathetic person is someone who doesn't just feel sad on their behalf. The empathetic person allows their emotions to drive them to make a difference in other people's lives. Sympathy isn't enough. Sympathy means feeling sadness for another person and their fate. I might feel sorry for the person who's lost their job or lost a loved one. I might have sympathy for someone who has been treated unjustly or unfairly. I might be moved by that someone has experienced a major disappointment in their life, and I might feel sad for them. Sympathy leads me to say, I care about you and what you're going through. But empathy, I think, is something more. It's more than merely feeling sad about someone else's struggle. Empathy is the practice of allowing yourself to imaginatively enter into another person's world and into their experience, and letting that imaginative encounter change the way that you think and feel and experience your own life. Empathy leads us to say, I'm hurting with you. And whereas sympathy can sometimes strike an almost condescending tone, empathy is about recognizing that you could easily find yourself in the same position if the circumstances were just a little bit different. Perhaps the idea is captured well in that old phrase, there, but for the grace of God, go I. There's nothing wrong with sympathy, but I would challenge us that we need to move beyond merely sympathy to becoming a more empathetic person. Empathy manifests itself through more patience with others, more compassion, more willingness to lead a helping hand, even when it's not comfortable or convenient to do so. Empathy puts aside judgment as we search to really understand. Empathy offers people room to be themselves and makes us slower to judge. Instead, empathy searches to understand what might be behind another person's words and actions. With empathy, we're able to make a deeper difference in the lives of those around us because we not only have an intellectual grasp of people's needs and struggles, but we feel them at the deepest level. Their needs become more urgent to us. Ultimately, empathy takes the focus off of me and reminds me that there's a bigger world outside of the small one that I happen to inhabit. It seems to me that imagining what it's like to be someone other than yourself is perhaps the core of human caring, the thing that drives compassion to action. Let's face it, our natural tendency is to have a me-first attitude. We only need to look honestly at our own lives to understand how deeply ingrained that attitude is. Therefore, we should recognize that empathy is not a natural response as much as it is a learned response, something that we have to develop. It is a direction in which our self-centered heart needs to be stretched and expanded. The question then becomes, are we willing to allow God to do that work within us? If we are, how might we grow in the art of empathy? I want to give you, since three-point sermons are the rage, right? I'll give you three ways that we can grow. The first way that we can grow in empathy is by recognizing the barriers toward it that exist within us. What are the things that hold us back from being empathetic to others? I'd like to suggest there are four different things that tend to hold us back. First, prejudice. Our preconceptions, our stereotypes, cause us not to see people as individuals, but as members of groups. We look at a person and say to ourselves, oh, he's just one of those. Or she's a typical. Just fill in the blank. These labels prevent us from seeing people as the individuals that they are. And these prejudices can be really difficult to overcome, as they're often very deeply embedded in us, and we're sometimes ignorant of how deeply held they really are. We may have even learned our prejudices from people that we love very much. I often find myself having an instinctive reaction to a person or a situation that, if I'm honest with myself, simply doesn't stand up under any kind of moral scrutiny. It's merely a deep-seated prejudice that is affecting my way of seeing things. But growing in empathy can help us to set aside the erroneous stereotypes that we might have about others. 2, unexamined acquiescence to authority. Sometimes mindlessly following authority figures can damage our sense of empathy, especially if those authorities are pushing some sort of an us versus them narrative that blames some other group of people for all the problems that we are currently having. Down through history, how many atrocities have been justified by just going with the flow and saying, well, I was just obeying orders. I was just doing what I was told. The philosopher Hannah Arendt called this kind of response the banality of evil. It's insidious. It is the evil of complicity to injustice and unkindness and cruelty. And it's something we must beware of if we want to grow in empathy. 3, distance. It's harder for us to care for those who are out of sight or who are further away from us. Now, this can consist of actual physical distance, which might allow us to ignore terrible things happening to people who live far, far away from us. Or it might be the social distance created by differences of race or economic status or a social group other than our own. It's easier for us to care about people who talk like us, look like us, act like us, and have the same life experiences as we have had. But empathy can help us break down the barriers of distance and bring the concerns of others closer to our own as we recognize our shared humanity and the many things that we actually do hold in common. And 4, denial. We want to ignore those realities that are unpleasant or uncomfortable to think about, especially if they seem like complex or complicated scenarios or problems. Our natural response is to search for alternative explanations or interpretations for those things that we just don't actually want to see, that we don't want to admit are true. We make excuses and look away because we feel, well, overwhelmed. We might turn a blind eye because, oh, I just can't deal with it. I certainly get this. I've struggled a lot with that in recent years. But empathy calls me to stay engaged. Even if I might need to temporarily disengage for a bit just for the sake of my mental health, I don't want to stay in that place of ceasing to care about the struggles of other people. These are a few of the things that can be a barrier to becoming empathetic. To overcome them, we have to be honest with ourselves and take the risk of allowing ourselves to think differently and to feel differently. There are barriers, but there are barriers I believe we can overcome. 2, a second way that we can grow in empathy is by opening ourselves up to the worlds of others. In a very real sense, can we get the next slide? Oh, in a very real sense, compassion begins with curiosity, with the desire to travel beyond the borders of our own small and secure world. It is a desire to get a glimpse of the lives of people whose world is very different from our own. That's why traveling, especially traveling outside your country, can be so helpful. Curiosity about other cultures leads to a deeper understanding of them. and a deeper realization that perhaps your own culture and its ways of doing things isn't the only valid way. Curiosity means we need to keep asking questions, keep challenging the accepted norms or the way that we've been taught to think and to respond, and to keep seeking fresh perspectives and more information. We need to listen, because real listening creates real conversations, and real conversations create deeper understanding and deeper empathy. You don't have to travel around the world to practice curiosity. Maybe all you need to do is travel across the room. And the arts can be a way to teach us how to imagine what the lives of others might be like. You know that I'm someone who appreciates the arts and will, without much provocation, tell you how they have impacted my life and how they can impact yours. Thank you for your patience with that. But I would like to suggest that one of the biggest ways that the arts can impact your life is by helping you expand your sense of empathy. Books and movies and visual art and music can all challenge you to think and feel outside of your own limited experience. The arts can help you and me exercise our imaginations so that we can understand more clearly how other people might think and might feel. The arts can take us places, both externally and internally, that we've never been before. The stories they tell us take us deeply into other people's lives. During the time I'm reading a novel or watching a film, if it's a good one, I'm existing inside of somebody else's world. I'm living vicariously. And as I do, I feel their heartbreak, experiencing their failures, and am moved by their struggles, as well as by their triumphs and their transformations. When we experience great art, it can take us places we've never been. We see things we've never seen. We're confronted by thoughts we've never previously considered. And we face new temptations and conflicts and dilemmas that we've never actually grasped with ourselves. And if we let them, these experiences can expand our perspectives. They can reveal unpleasant truths, and they can challenge us to think along with the people on stage or on the page about the difficult issues they face and ponder how we might deal with those issues were we to have to face them. I'll never forget watching the movie The Florida Project. Now, it's frankly a difficult film to watch. It's filled with harsh language and sketchy situations. Definitely not one for the kiddies. The Florida Project tells the story of a single mother of two children who has come to the end of her financial resources. She is desperate, and her desperation makes her prone to poor decisions. In one memorable scene, we learn that she often takes her kids to nearby hotels, where the hotels that serve a free breakfast for their guests. They all get in line and partake of the free buffet, which is, in some cases, the only food they might get to eat that day. But when she gets caught by visiting the same hotel once too often, she is shamed and threatened, and has to make a run for it to escape the consequences. It's not a happy movie. I found it hard to watch. But like many novels I've read or songs I've listened to, it took me into a different world, a different set of experiences, unlike any that I've ever had myself. And it broke my heart in the best kind of way. It led me to think differently about those who can't get a break in life. And even as I would not condone the choices that the mother in that film makes, I could at least understand them a little better. It drove me to think about what could I do to help people in a situation like hers, the hopeless single mom. The third thing I'd like to suggest for growing in empathy is to allow God to expand your heart. Just as our physical muscles are strengthened with use, so our moral muscles, our muscles of compassion, grow more agile as they are exercised. I believe this is a work that God wants to do in each and every one of us. As we read the Gospels, we see Jesus was the most empathetic person who ever walked this planet. We read of so many instances of him being moved by his compassion for others. And this is what he calls us to. He explicitly calls us to make the welfare of others a priority in our lives. There are two great commandments. What are they? Love God, love our neighbor. As we seek to practice empathy, to imagine ourselves into the lives of others and be moved by what moves them, it will, I promise you, transform your spiritual life. It will create in us a deeper sense of compassion for others. It will help us respect their dignity. Their dignity. Even as we feel sorrow for their struggles. It will make us less prone to be judgmental. If we take the time to listen, we'll learn that there's always a story behind every choice that people make. Even if that choice is the wrong one, we understand that all our stories are constructed out of our choices. And you and I, well, we've probably made some bad ones ourselves. And this should make us a little more patient with the people in our lives or the people who come into our lives. It can impact the way we see ourselves as we take a more generous position toward that mixture of good and bad that we see in others. Perhaps we'll even find more patience for that mixture that's within each one of us. True empathy can lead us toward the possibility of real change when we stop focusing on beating ourselves up for our failings and instead focus our energy toward who God wants us to become. And as we grasp the bigger picture of empathy that God feels toward us, perhaps we'll see our place in that larger story of redemption, where God is calling us to reflect his love toward others. Ephesians 4:32 reminds us to be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ in God forgave you. As we practice sympathy, we begin to find that just a little easier to do. Ultimately, empathy is a sign of our love and commitment to Jesus. In the parable of the sheep and the goats, found in Matthew 25, which we read today, Jesus explicitly tells us how our faithfulness to him will be judged. How our faithfulness will be judged. It is not by the passion of our praise songs. It is not by the precision of our theology. It is not by our allegiance to family values or to our victories in the culture wars. It's not by the size of our sacred gatherings. No. Our faithfulness to him is based upon how committed we are to meeting the needs of the hungry, the unhoused, the stranger in our midst, the sick, and the imprisoned. What we do for such people, arising from our sense of empathy toward them, we do for him. Jesus says, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." And our neglect of such people, he says, means what? That we are neglecting him. If that is the case, shouldn't these priorities impact the choices that we make in our personal lives, in our politics, and in our churches. For inasmuch as we neglect these needs, we neglect Jesus, the one whose face we should be seeing in the poor, the needy, the neglected, the fearful, and the fallen. That, my friends, is the heart of empathy. Thank you.